You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.
Hi, everyone. This is John Mandrola from theheart.org Medscape Cardiology, and this is This Week in Cardiology for June 2nd, 2017. This week, I'm going to talk about chocolate intake and atrial fibrillation, CTO-PCI, restarting anticoagulation after intracranial hemorrhage, a novel way to lower LDL, and the dangers of anabolic steroids. First up is the issue of chocolate consumption and incident AFib. We ask patients with AFib to forego a lot of fun stuff, alcohol, comfort, and junk foods. A recent observational and longitudinal study suggests that chocolate consumption might join coffee on the okay to consume list for arrhythmia. That's right, coffee does not associate with AFib, and moderate habitual consumption of coffee may be protective. This most recent study, which was published in the journal Heart, which is a British medical journal, uses longitudinal data from the Danish Diet Cancer and Health Study. It had 55,000 participants. The ages were 50 to 64, and they had more than 3,300 new cases of AFib to study. The researchers found a graded response. People who rarely ate chocolate less than once per month, for instance, were compared to those that ate it at 1 to 3 servings per month, 1 serving per week, 2 to 6 servings per week, and then greater than 1 serving per day. And the response ranged from a 10% reduction in the incidence of AFib all the way up to a 20% reduction. The effect plateaued at people who ate chocolate more than one time per day. Now, one could do a whole podcast on this study. 4 major points. First, nearly all of us would like to suspend our critical appraisal antennas because it's chocolate, but we shouldn't. This is merely an association study. Confounding variables are likely playing a role. For instance, chocolate eaters may be doing many other things that help prevent atrial fibrillation. The second point is that the altmetric score here is off the charts. The paper was published on May 2nd in print, and already its score is over 2,000. 220 news outlets have covered it, and it's been tweeted 500 times. Third point, there is some plausibility here. The authors discussed the antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, and antiplatelet properties of cocoa. Cocoa also has magnesium. And finally, and this mechanism is admittedly soft, chocolate tends to make people happy. And I tell my AFib patients that things that make your brain happy seem to correlate with having less atrial fibrillation. Finally, these observations are remarkably similar to the caffeine and caffeine studies. I'm working on a column now on the possible caffeine-related death of a young person in South Carolina. It's so interesting that 2 observational studies show very similar graded responses with coffee as does this study with chocolate. Second topic is chronic total occlusion PCI, or percutaneous coronary intervention. CTOs, as they're called, account for 16 to 18% of coronary lesions in patients with stable coronary disease. In the past, opening these vessels was a moot point because we couldn't. Now we have improved tools, so we can often get the vessels open. The question is whether we should. And I don't know about your hospital, but at mine, CTO procedures are continuing to rise. The EuroCTO trial was presented in abstract form at the most recent EuroPCR meeting as a late-breaking study. It was a multi-center RCT of CTO versus medical therapy in European centers. Now, the endpoints of this trial was to assess safety and health status. The endpoints were not major adverse cardiac events. And the enrollment of the trial was slow and non-consecutive. Planners had hoped for about 1,000 patients, but ended up with far fewer. CTO-PCI was performed in 259 with a success rate of 86%. Now, the findings were that patients in this trial with CTO had a little bit less angina, less physical limitations, and a trend towards improved quality of life as assessed by a questionnaire. However, there is no change in treatment satisfaction or angina stability and no change in anxiety or self-care. no significant differences in major adverse cardiac events, and the complication rate of CTO was 3%. Now, my comments are that in the setting of the recently presented Decision CTO trial, which was a very negative trial, no improvement in angina or major adverse cardiac events, this small trial, this Euro CTO trial, does not convince me we should be doing more CTO PCI. I think before exposing patients to the risks of CTO treatment, I think we need much more convincing data. Third topic is the issue of anticoagulation after intracranial hemorrhage. Now, the easy thinking, no thinking answer is to say no, double no. Never use anticoagulation after a patient suffers an intracranial hemorrhage. But two new meta-analyses presented at the European Stroke Organization Conference in Prague suggest we should not be so dogmatic in our thinking about anticoagulation after intracranial hemorrhage. One of the presented studies, a meta-analysis of three previous ICH studies in a total of about 1,000 patients who had been diagnosed with an acute ICH and had been taking anticoagulation for stroke prevention. This meta-analysis found that resumption of oral anticoagulation was associated with reduced mortality, improved functional outcomes, and decreased ischemic stroke risk at 1 year in patients who had lobar and non-lobar intracranial hemorrhage. And there wasn't a significant increase in recurrent intracranial hemorrhage, which obviously is the major concern. The other presentation at this meeting was similar. In this group, meta-analyzed 7 observational studies looking at oral anticoagulations or antiplatelet resumption in about 2,500 patients with ICH and AFib. And when the researchers looked at pooled annual event rates, ischemic strokes were lower on anticoagulation, but there was no difference in recurrent intracranial hemorrhage. For instance, the rate of ICH of 4.6 when restarting anticoagulation was not different than 4.2% without starting any antithrombotic agents. It's important to say that all of this data is observational. We have to be careful because people restarted on anticoagulation after an ICH almost certainly have unmeasured characteristics that convince their doctors to think it's a reasonable thing to do. But I highlight this data because it makes you think, and because I've seen this scenario in practice. One recent case comes to mind. A man presented with ischemic stroke, then had hemorrhagic transformation, so he had an intracranial hemorrhage. He recovered, but still had permanent atrial fibrillation. We eventually restarted his anticoagulation because the inciting event was an ischemic stroke, and had he not had the embolic occlusion of a vessel, he would not have had the bleeding event. Next topic is a novel LDL-lowering strategy. This week, the New England Journal of Medicine featured 2 very early but somewhat promising studies on lowering LDL and triglyceride levels by inhibiting a protein called angiopoietin-like 3. Now, similar to the PCSK9 inhibitor story, people with angiopoietin-like 3 loss-of-function variants had better lipid and metabolic effects, including LDL and triglyceride levels 70% lower than people without the variant. So, you can probably guess how this story is going to go. Biotech companies began testing monoclonal antibodies to this new protein. That was in one of the papers. In the other paper, another biotech company studied an antisense oligonucleotide targeting angiopoietin-like 3 messenger RNA. So these early studies looked at the effects of the two approaches, monoclonal antibodies targeting messenger RNA in mice and in small numbers of healthy human volunteers. And the lipid-lowering results looked promising, and thus this work will almost certainly stimulate further development of a drug targeting the protein angiopoietin-like 3. The final topic today is on the use of anabolic steroids. Now, whereas the use of anabolic steroids was once the domain of a very small number of elite athletes, the performance-enhancing drugs are becoming increasingly common in the general population. You may not know this, but amateur bike racers in my age category, old guys, are getting busted for testosterone use, and this is to win local criteriums. A new analysis published in Circulation showed that LV function by echo was significantly reduced among steroid users compared with non-users. Additionally, steroid users also showed a significantly greater burden of coronary atherosclerosis as measured by CT angio, and this risk appeared to worsen with cumulative lifetime use. Parameters of diastolic function were also abnormal compared with non-users of steroids. Now, this data is observational, but it's an important clinical study because steroid use should be considered in the athletic patient with undiagnosed heart disease. It's also worthy to promote these findings to raise public awareness of the harms of anabolic steroid use. Truthfully, not every user of steroids will be dissuaded by this knowledge, but some people may be. So that's it for this week in cardiology. I'm grateful that you listened. Thank you. Until next week, this is John Mandrola from the Heart.org Medscape Cardiology.
You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from the Heart.org on Medscape.